Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should.
Folks, our next guest is single-handedly responsible for getting me out of a huge rut I was in regarding my playing. Just from his YouTube video lessons, this amazing player teacher inspired me and got me to look at things in a completely different way and helped me get out of my own way, which was my biggest problem. So, he's a guitarist, he's a songwriter, he's a producer, he's a sideman, a collaborator, an artist in his own right. Please welcome to Guitar Radio Show, Kerry Too Smooth Marshall. How are you, sir?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. We are doing a Zoom. I don't do these that often, but this is cool. So I get to see your face, which is cool. Often enough,
yeah,
it's not like that. Folks, go to kerrytoosmooth.com and check out the website, especially for you players out there that are really looking to enhance what you do and really kind of refine. That's something, you know, do you even think about that at all? Do you ever stop to say, wow, how you're impacting other people's lives with this?
It was definitely something that I thought about, especially when I was in the military. I always told myself if I could ever get to a place in my career that I felt comfortable enough, I wanted to always do it. So this has always kind of been like this passion project that's kind of grown into what Kerry's Camp has kind of morphed into. So I just remember when I was trying to get out there, this is the days of MySpace, and I was trying to reach out to other guitarists that were like playing at a professional level, and I was getting minimal responses or minimal contact, and I was like, I hated that feeling. And I was like, I just believed in myself that like I'm just going to keep swinging at it, I'm going to hit something. So when I finally get on, I'm going to give back. So yeah, I think about the impact on just reading. I'm always like overwhelmed by what I hear, but I read because, you know, people, you never know how what you're teaching or what you're sharing can impact or affect somebody. So just being able to experience that, it's just like, it's always a blessing. So I'm always grateful.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I'm grateful because like I said, it really, you know, one day, I don't know what it was. I was searching something. And then you came up in my YouTube feed, and then all of a sudden you kept popping up. You know how that algorithm works. And I was like,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
I was like, I gotta start to dig deep here. And that's what I'm one of those listeners, you know, that I just hear a little something, and I'm like, oh, okay,
right.
That perks my ears up, and I want to know I want to know more. And so then I went and I subscribed to your page. And I would sit there, and all of a sudden, I would go down these rabbit holes with you, you know, of like, oh, shit, I can do it this. Oh, shit, I can. Oh,
right. Oh, shit.
It's like, wow, this is amazing, you know, and I'm so grateful for that because it really has changed everything for me. And I play even cleaner than I did. I play more precise than I did. So it's really a gift. So thank you for that. I think it's great. You have played with all kinds of folks.
Yeah.
And you know, you have an amazing career, storied career as far as, but what I'm curious about is what was it in Alabama? What happened in Alabama for you to all of a sudden say, or who was it that you heard that you said, oh, this is it, this is what I want to do? Because it's obvious in you when I hear you play and I hear you talk, especially, the passion that you have for what you do and this connection that you have to the instrument and to the music in general. What was it?
Yeah, so for me, initially starting out, you know, I was raised in the church, so just seeing the guitarist play at my church, to me, he felt like a rock star. I felt like I just saw this aura around him, like this orange light when he was playing, and I wanted that sensation. So I just kept seeing, like, him playing, then all the times that you turn on TV, you see, like, guitarists rock out in these concerts, and it's just like, you know, when the guitar player would take a solo, he's got his hair blown in the wind and, like, the smoke and everything, and I'm like, I want that sensation, because he just felt like, he was just, like, immortal kind of person. And so every time that I would, like, play with, you know, my cousin, we would, like, make a band, I had to be the guitarist. So, like, it didn't matter. I always wanted to be the guitarist. So it was something that I just, like, it stuck with me. And I remember when I was 11 years old and my parents were like, if you make the AB Honor Roll, we'll buy you a guitar. And so I made the AB Honor Roll. And this is when Sears was kind of a big thing. So they gave me the catalog and I circled this big red guitar. I was like, I want this one right here. And as soon as I got it in my hand, it was just like an instant connection, like, I feel like this is what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to be professional, but I feel like I'm always going to be around it. And really for me, it was like when I was in the military, I remember doing this talent show in front of about 2,000 of my peers. And that sensation, that feeling on stage, just like, even though we didn't play anything that was like great, you know, but like, you know, for your Army buddies, everybody, you know, is cheering you on. And then we won the talent show. I knew right then and there, I wanted that same sensation that I had on stage, that same feeling every single day. So I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I know I wasn't going to stop until I was able to do it. And so, you know, just moving back to Birmingham because I was stationed in Germany, I came back to Birmingham and I started playing at all the local clubs. It didn't matter, like, if it was a small coffee shop, if it was a bigger venue, it didn't matter if I was open up for the, you know, the artist that was coming through or whatever the case be. I wanted to try to get as much, you know, training as I possibly could, because I knew if I wanted to try to go to the next level, I needed to know all of the stuff at the lowest level. So when I'm out there, if I try to do it at the highest level, I'm not exposed. And that was the biggest thing that I wanted to do. So Birmingham really gave me the foundation in order to know when I made it to LA, when I moved to LA. Like, it was like clockwork for me when I got to LA, because I was like, oh, I've been doing this for years.
Right.
It's a different environment, but I don't feel intimidated. Like, if I would have just gone out there and not known anything.
Right. For sure. I can hear that for sure. So, you know, do you find there's a huge difference between playing worship music and playing, you know, playing in a bar?
No. So the idea is the same, because you're still trying to create this environment, right? So even if I'm playing in a bar, I still want the people, the audience, to feel like I want to have a good time, you know? So if you're playing worship music, you still want the people that are the patrons that go to the church, you know, the parishioners that go to the church, you want them to still be ingrained in what's going on. So you're still trying to create an environment. It's about really the type of music and just the lyrics, but the mindset of the approach is the same. Like, I want to make sure, like, that if I have to play my part, like, if I'm, let's say if it's a worship song and I'm leading the song, like, I have to do a solo, it's invoking, like, an emotion. Same thing if I'm playing in a bar and I'm playing, like, a solo to, like, you know, Raspberry Beret or, you know, saying a Prince song. I want to make sure that, like, somebody leaves and like, dude, when you were playing that song, man, I felt something. That's the compliment. That's the ultimate goal that you want to hear.
Right. So what kind of, so you mentioned Raspberry Beret, you mentioned Prince. What music were you playing in the clubs?
So in the clubs, like, especially in Alabama, you're playing Brown Eyed Girl, you're playing Sweet Home Alabama. I mean, the spectrum was huge.
Right.
You know, you're playing, like, Down Home Blues, you're playing some blues, then you're playing, like, your top 40 covers. So, like, in a bar situation, I think that's probably where you learn the most music and you learn how to be authentic to every genre.
Yeah.
Just trying to play whatever you want. Because depending on the singer or whatever kind of cover you're doing, the audience, they know that song. So you can't get up there and be like, I'm playing Brown Eyed Girl, but I'm playing like R&B changes over. They're going to be like, that's not the song, because they want to sing along. They know that song. So
right.
That's why I say the bars really kind of teach you, like, you're going to play this song, you got to play it this way, you know. So
right.
It was really good. It's a way to really understand how to be authentic in whatever genre that you're playing.
Right. I think that's one of the things that I like most about you is that you're a chameleon. You kind of just say to yourself, okay, well, this is the environment I'm in right now. I'm going to play in this environment, you know, and I'm going to do what I do within these boundaries. That's the sign of one. That's a really good musician, and also somebody that's really ripe for session work.
Yeah.
So was it when you went to LA when the session work really started to happen, or was it happening back east?
Well, it was happening back east. It wasn't to the magnitude. Like, I wasn't getting the bigger calls, like, to play for, like, an Emily Sandé session or to play for Rita Ora, like, come to the studio and do something for her. Like, in Birmingham, I was getting, like, you know, people who are aspiring, but they may have, like, a small following. Like, I heard about you. Do you mind playing on my record? So it was, that's why I say Birmingham was a great training ground for me to really understand the art and the craft, because I was a raw talent, you know. Like, you know, if you're watching sports, whatever, you see somebody in, like, you know, recruiters kind of recruiting kids out of high school. Oh, he's got raw talent. If somebody like a coach at a collegiate level to really kind of mold you to get you prepared for, like, the major leagues or you know, turning pro. And that's how Birmingham was for me. So Birmingham was, I was raw. It took certain artists to be like, okay, we see potential in you. You need to work on these things. Or if I do a studio session, like at first when I started doing sessions, the metronome used to mess me up all the time because I was like, I don't, like, when do I come in? Like, I don't know when to come in. I used to hesitate. I was just so nervous. And I got with one engineer, like, his name was Tony Wagner. He was, like, an older gentleman. He was just very patient with me. He was like, come by the studio. I'll work with you. I'll help you on, like, figure out how to, like, layer your sounds, how to pan your guitars, how to play with the metronome. And he just helped me to get comfortable in the studio. So whenever we had to do a live recording, usually when we did live recordings, I was with a band, I'd be like, oh, no, I'll just do my overdubs. Y'all just let me know when you want to do it, because I was intimidated. Mm. I just didn't feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But he got me to the point to where, like, we're all in a session. I'm like, oh, what's the music? Like, you got the charts, we can go. You know, so, which I really appreciate, because he helped me when I got to L.A. Most of the situations, everybody's in there. You don't get a chance to bring the record home, because these bigger, you know, studios, they don't want you to, like, you know, everybody wants to keep everything close to the vest. They don't want to let the music get out.
Right.
Like, it leaked some kind of way. So he really helped me out. And I tell him all the time, like, I said, you don't even realize how much confidence you gave me to be able to play, especially in the studio session, to feel comfortable to do what I need to do.
Yeah, for sure. And often enough, I mean, had you ever walked into a session where, because I was talking to Tom Bukovac and Guthrie Trapp those cats. So they walk into a session sometimes and they're like, well, we really need a riff. The producer will be like, we need a riff. And it's like, wait a minute, you don't have the song written? It's like,
that happens more times than you don't know. Like, they'll have an idea, or like, or we kind of like, we wanted to kind of feel like this, and you're just like, I thought the music was already, so you're composing.
Right.
And so, like, that's one of the things too. Like I said, Birmingham really taught me, like, a lot of composition, because you have a lot of raw talent, a lot of artists who don't really know what they want. And so I even learned how to communicate with artists, because sometimes they may not know music. They just know it doesn't feel right.
Right.
And so you have to be able to decipher what they're saying about, well, I want it to feel like this, but it does something, ding-a-ding-a-ding-a. Like, you got to understand what that means. You know, like, what kind of language is that?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able, that all of that stuff really helped me, because I realized in LA, even major artists do the same thing.
Yeah.
They can't tell you, like, oh, I want a C chord. You know, that C chord, I want you to play this change. They're like, no, I just don't, I want it a little bit higher, but I want it to do like this, dun-dun-dun. Like, you got to figure out, because they're not telling you notes. You just got to figure out what that means and find how to communicate.
So, right. Yeah,
had I not done that in Birmingham, like, L.A. would have been very, very difficult.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I think of that story that Carole Kaye, the famous Wrecking Crew bass player, when she was on the session with Sonny and Cher for The Beat Goes On.
Yeah.
And she said, and they were like, yeah, we need a little something here. And she's like, well, how about this? And she played that bass line, that doom, 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 doom. And everybody was like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. It happens more times than not.
She created the lick, the riff, that was the most recognizable part of the song.
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing to me. Still, to this
day. Happens more times than people know.
It's crazy. So, you know, speaking of the people that you work with, you know, like Sean Kingston, Tyrese, Jason Derulo. When you work with different artists, are they, when you get in there, are they looking for you? Or are they saying, I know he can give me what I want, what I hear in my head, or what is it?
So usually when you get those calls, it's the musical director. He's the one that has his vision for like this all-star team. He's the one that's like assembling
right.
this team. And usually what the artist does, the artist will trust whatever the direction that the musical director is saying.
Right.
Now, when their artist is like in rehearsals, he's definitely listening for like, oh, I don't like what the guitar player is doing right here. And he'll be like, can we change whatever? So when you come in, there has to be a level of understanding. Like you have to be able to give the artist what they want. Still find a place to fit yourself in the music, but not be too much of an individual where you step mm-hmm. out. So mm-hmm. it's like a real balance. I think for me, my first time playing for an artist at a professional level like was with Ledisi. And I think my first show, I was so excited. I was just like, all of my talents that I've been working on, I got to put them out because that's what it's about. You know, that's what I thought. And so that was probably my worst show. I remember like the day after, like she reprimanded me so bad, but it's exactly what I needed because if she would have told me like about the things that I was doing, I would have always thought that that's what it was. And it would have never gotten any more calls and just realized that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times when you're aspiring to get to that level, you think that because we see clips, we see the highlight reels of like when a person's on stage, like just going for blood, just ripping like, oh yeah. man, we need to do that every single time.
Right.
Not realizing that's just one small section of a whole concert. That's
right.
not the whole show.
Right.
And so I thought that like, oh man, this is my time to be on stage. I got to just be going crazy. You know, still be within whatever. And I had to understand that, like, listen, your job is to accompany artists. So, like, you have to find the way to give the artist what they need. You can have a little splashes of yourself in there, your personality, your character, but don't take it to the extreme because mm-hmm. it's not your show, it's their show. And that's mm-hmm. one of the balances that I had to learn, you know. And I started to realize all of the calls that I was getting and starting to work with different artists. And each artist has a different personality type. So, for Jason, mindset was a lot more playful than Sean Kingston. Sean Kingston would come in rehearsal and not even really talk to the band. Unlike Jason, Jason's like cracking jokes and having fun. So you had to learn how to like not take it personal because I used to take it personal. I'm like, you don't even speak. Like, what is that? Like, I'm from Alabama. We all speak. We know Southern hospitality. What's going on?
Right.
And I had to realize that it's not personal. It's just like you don't know what they're dealing with. People have different mindsets, and you're just there for a job.
Yep.
You know, we're not there to be best friends.
Right.
And so once I started to understand that, it was easier for me to do my job versus like take it personal because like, you know, like if it's my band, I want to make sure everybody that I'm cool. I have a relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm cool. We can laugh. We can go grab something to drink, whatever the case is, you mm-hmm. know, unlike, you know, there in LA, it's like, it's a job. It's, we hired you. I may not even really know you. I may not even learn your name. Like,
right.
You got hired to do this because it's just like, for them, it could be like, I'm just doing this particular show and then I'm off to the next thing. And I got to go film.
Right. You know?
So that's one of the things I had to realize.
Right. For sure. Are you getting any gigs now as far as where people are saying, hey, just fly it in? You don't even have to be here in the studio. Just fly it in?
Yeah, so I've got a lot of virtual stuff that I've got in. I got a call like last week about just doing stems for somebody else. And then I got a text last night where somebody wants me to actually physically fly to L.A. so we can rehearse to do a show. So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Which is, I think now that since everything's kind of like slowing down with the pandemic, things are starting to open up a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think slowly but surely, I mean, I don't know if it'll look how it used to, but I think like it's starting to open up a lot more where there will be more work. I just don't know if it'll look like the huge festivals like how we used to do. I don't know if that'll be the case, but whatever it is, like I said, I mean, you adapt and you overcome.
Exactly. That's the word I was just going to say. Yes, you adapt. That's what it's all about. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was talking to, you know, are you familiar with Andrew Sinewick?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he had ended up building a state-of-the-art studio in his home because he found that he was getting a lot more work through flying it out, you know, just you know, people sending it to them than him sending it back. And, you know, he said, you know, and it has good merits to it and bad merits to it. And the good merits are, yeah, I didn't have to leave the house. I did it in my slippers. I had a cup of coffee with me and I did what I did and boom, I knocked it out. But at the same token, there was something to be said to be in a room to feel the air move, you know, with these other musicians.
Like you said, I mean, he's exactly right. I mean, there's plenty of times I get these sessions and I'm just like, all right, cool. I wake up, stretch out. Like you said, I go in with my PJs and I'm knocking out this record. And then there was a session that I had last week where they flew some of the band members in and we all are in the same room creating. It's just like bouncing the ideas off of each other, energy. So yeah, it is, it's like, it's a blessing and a little bit of a curse, but you just, like you said, you have to learn how to adapt. That's one of the biggest traits that I could tell to anybody. If you wanted to do this job at this level, you have to learn how to adapt because every situation is going to be different.
Yeah.
And everybody wants your best. So you got to figure out how to make it to be the best regardless of whatever's happening.
Absolutely, for sure. Yeah, it was one of the things that you were saying earlier. You were talking about, and when I heard you describing it, I was like, you know, he's talking about when you're working with whoever it is you're working with, it's about finding the nuance.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that you ended up giving to me.
Oh, wow.
Through your, you know, I was like, because I've always, you know, I started out as a rock guy.
Right.
You know, and I was always, because of my dad, I was always really into the blues.
Right.
And so even though, you know, like in the 80s when I had hair and I played in a hard rock band and I toured all over the place and, you know, had record deals and blah, blah, blah. I was always listening to the blues and I grew up in the 70s. So for me, it was, you know, 70s soul, blues, and 70s rock, particularly like, you know, some of the more androgynous, like glam rock and stuff like that, you know. But that was the music that I was hearing on Top 40 radio. So for me, it was like I had a steady diet of Marvin Gaye, Roberta Flack, The Sweet, The New York Dolls, and Led Zeppelin. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute, Jimmy Page is the greatest plagiarist of all. So let me go back and listen to all the stuff he stole. So, you know, but once again, those nuances of all of that end up becoming who you are as a player and become this big stewing pot of what you are. Do you feel like that about yourself?
Of course. I tell people all the time, if I had to describe my playing, it's like a big pot of gumbo because there's so many different elements and sprinkles. And so many different influences. Like when people hear you play, they're like, "Oh, you sound like this," and I can hear this, and I can hear that. That's how you develop and find your own voice. Like even like when you have me being a military brat, you learn different colloquialisms for different areas that you live in. Like I know when people are on the East Coast, especially New York, they talk a certain way or they dress a certain way versus down South, LA, or the Midwest, or even the Northwest. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like it's just like when you go to a grocery store, if you're making a meal. You know, you take different things, or when you're making a salad, you take different things that you like on your salad and you just add those and you kind of make your own thing.
Right.
And that's one of the great things that I love about music, you know, and I always try to tell the guitar players and different people that I talk to or different students, like, you don't want to be a carbon copy, but it's cool to get influences, but you don't want to be a carbon copy.
Because right.
At the end of the day, if you're like, oh man, you sound just like da-da-da, everything you do, after a while, yeah, there's a small market for that, but unless you're doing like a Vegas show where you're like impersonating a Michael Jackson type of show. After a while, it's just like, people are just like, but what do you do?
Yeah.
You know? And if you can't find that, it's really hard. So
it is. Absolutely. And if you are going to, you should never pigeonhole yourself. I know a lot of cats like that. I know a lot of cats like that, that are, cause they're just so into that sound, you know, those particular settings on that amp. And it's just like, okay, and that's it. That's all we're going to get here. You know? So that is going to narrow what you can do and where you're going to work and how you're going to work.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. So in 2013, you put out an album called No Ordinary Conversation.
Yeah.
Which I really love. And I want to talk about some tracks on there. But
okay.
Now that we live in the land of the single, you know, and you know, that's cyclical. It's and that's not a, that's, I don't think it's a problem at all.
Right.
I mean, yes, I love albums because I think I get to really experience all the nuances again of that particular artist. And, you know, when I dig a particular artist and all I get is a single, I'm like, oh, I want more. Give me more. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but do you think now, living in the land of the single, that a record like No Ordinary Conversation could get done again today? Or is that kind of come and gone?
I, friends, right? So, like, I did No Ordinary Conversation, and then, like, a few years later, I did a song called Puppy Love.
Right.
That was, like, 10 minutes long.
Right. Right.
And so I felt like, because when you're working on an album, it's, like, it's so much energy and so much that you give to yourself, and then, like, trying to find the right producers or the right person to mix it, it's just a lot. So I think the reason why people probably start doing more singles, it's, like, it's less overhead, less, like, you know, I can only go to one person to mix it or do whatever, and then it's, like, it's done, mm-hmm. you know. So I think you'll probably get more EPs than you'll probably get, like, albums for sure, because I think, number one, we're almost in an instant era. Like, when you say you're working on a project, people are like, okay, cool, like, within 6 months or a year, like, what are you doing? Like, where is it at? And so people want it. So I feel like that's probably more suitable. I don't know that, per se, like, for me, like, I tell people all the time, I'm kind of in a space where I, like, my way of kind of sharing my art is, like, through social media, because I don't really feel like sitting down and, like, really working on my stuff. Now, I'll work on somebody else's, help them come to life, help kind of create that environment, like, you know. But for me, I feel like it really depends on the genre, mm-hmm. and it depends on, like, the resources behind it. Because now, like, everything's changing. Everybody wants to be independent, so you really don't have that huge label kind of helping you to kind of put yourself out. So most people are trying to put stuff out to make it more current. So if you have a single that drops every so often, mm-hmm. that gives people something to look forward to, versus if you gave them a project, they have to sit with it, and then the next thing, somebody else is putting more music, and you're just, like, you're kind of left behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that really makes a lot of sense, too, to me. And I hadn't really thought about it that way before. The idea that if you – hello, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, you disappeared for a second. So that makes a lot of sense. It's you know, if you have, say you have an album's worth of material, and you say, well, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and just release a single a month.
Yeah.
Then at least you're in everybody's face.
You're relevant on a more consistent level.
And then there, right. you know, there is the downside of the album. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, well, now what, we got to wait another 2 years for a record?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. we are living in a world of, you know, I was listening to somebody talk the other day, a rock journalist talked the other day, and he was saying that, you know, Rolling Stone magazine now is a monthly.
Yeah.
And it's like, are they crazy? You know, I mean, granted, right. they got purchased. They got purchased by a conglomerate. So, but they're a monthly now, and they're this glossy magazine that comes out every month. Meanwhile, you go online, and the information that we were talking about at 10 a.m. is no longer right. relevant at 5 p.m.
Exactly.
So it really does make sense. And, you know, it's kind of like it was in the 50s, you know, the 50s and 60s, when it was all about singles.
Yep.
You know, like, you know, when they, all those writers in the Brill Building, they were just chunking out songs, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of, it is cyclical. It really is. So yeah, that really makes sense. But I got to tell you, there, when I hear the stuff on No Ordinary Conversation, and then I hear the stuff, and then I hear Puppy Love, and then I hear Sin Desir,
mm-hmm.
which is like, whoa, complete left turn. Like a complete left turn from anything else. You know, Puppy Love, at least I could draw a line from No Ordinary Conversation to Puppy Love.
Yeah.
I could. Sin Desir, I was like, oh wow, what's this now?
Yeah. So for Sin Desir, so what happened was, there was an artist from Venezuela.
Yeah.
And
beautiful voice.
I was really big at that particular time. I was really big into Robert Glasper. So Robert Glasper, for me, was, he gave you the jazz influence, but he could take different artists from different genres and still kind of fuse them into what he was doing.
Right.
And so when I reached out to this artist that I was working with, I asked her, I was like, because we had to do one gig in L.A., and I was just like, man, I love the way you sing. Do you have any songs?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be open to kind of do like a collaborative kind of situation? And so that's where that came from. So I was just like, it was so like amazing, because number one, I've never played anything that felt like that. So that's why I said, like you said, it does kind of feel like it comes out of left field.
Yeah.
But it has its own, like, nostalgia to it, because you can still feel warm in the song, because it still has
yeah.
elements that you can relate to. But it also introduces you, if you've never heard anything like that before, it introduces you to like a different genre as well.
Oh yeah, no, it's fantastic. I love it. It wasn't what I was expecting, so that was even better. It was even better because of that. You know, I was like, wow. I was like, this guy is really like all over, and I love that. I really do. But you know, like on No Ordinary Conversation, I love that bees. Because, you know, of course, you're stretching out a little bit on the blues. That's great. Live for Love.
Yeah.
Is amazing. But Skyline.
Oh, yeah.
That's the track right there.
Yeah, I was literally in my truck driving down the highway, and I was just inspired. You know, like, you know, when you're driving and it's just visually, like, just stimulating. Mm-hmm. And I was just, like, seeing different things. I was like, that's where the inspiration came from just like looking at the skyline, just mm-hmm. thinking about just driving. You sometimes you're like, you're paying attention to the road, but you still kind of daydream at the same time.
So. Mm-hmm. Your playing on there is magnificent. It's just really great.
Thank you.
Really great. Before I let you go, I want to talk about Kerry's Camp.
Okay. Yeah.
Hit us up with that. What's going on with that?
So Kerry's Camp is a community of guitar players all over the world. And essentially, what we're doing is I want to teach people how to unlock the fretboard and feel comfortable when they're playing. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what I want to do. And what we do is we focus in on specifically on R&B, neo soul, and gospel. But the principles, once you learn the principles, you can take those principles and apply it to any genre. And so it's a community where we have people as young as like 17, 18, and as old as 66 and on. So it's for everybody at every skill level. It doesn't matter if you're a beginner who's never seen a guitar before, but you just love the way it sounds. Or if you've been around guitar for a couple of years, you're kind of a little familiar, but you're just like, there's still a lot of areas that you want to grow in. We have stuff specifically for you. Or if you feel like, I've been playing for a while, I know what I'm doing, I'm kind of like a semi-pro or I'm a pro, but I just want some like elements to help me out. We have stuff for you. So I wanted to make it where like nobody felt left out.
Right.
You know, every specific, you know, skill set is always taken care of. And we have over 700 lessons. And then another one of the things that I'm really excited about is, now we do this thing called Kerry's Corner, where we get different guitarists or artists that play at a certain high level, or they may be social media influencers or whatever, and we have them speak to the students. And it's just like a direct line. You know, I remember when you'd be in school, you have a clinic and somebody would come in.
Yeah.
And even still at a clinic, only 5 people could ask a question. Mm-hmm. And he may shake a few people's hands. I'm able to establish a relationship where sometimes these guitars will stay on for hours answering every single question, and to where the students are like, they feel like they have all this information that's been imparted to them that they would never get somewhere else. So it's really like a benefit. Like I said, I just use all of my relationships because I'm really big on relationships from people that I've met over the years or guitar buddies or people that we've been on the same gig. And you never know how it works out. And I'll just ask them like, hey, man, are you open to this? And so the students have really been benefiting from it. And I get it. It's a huge joy. We had Kingfish on, and Kingfish dropped so many gems and was like showing the students like, this is how I practice, it's what I do. And to be able to sit at the feet of somebody who is, everybody looks at it, she's like, oh my God, this guy's like a living legend, we get to sit here now.
Yeah,
it's something that I know that I never thought, you know, the Kerry's Camp could grow into something like that, because when I first did, I was just like, I just want to like help out as many people. And now to see it kind of morphing and grow into something even bigger is awesome. So we're always welcoming everybody all the time. It doesn't matter when you want to come in. And the great thing I like about it too is like, it's at your convenience. So I know people have personal lives, or they have kids, or they work, or whatever. You can jump on it anytime you want, so you have access to it 24/7. You know, which is great, because you may be in the car, you just want to watch a video, you're good, or you're at home, you got 10 minutes to practice. So it's like, it's user friendly, and we're always getting better. So I always take suggestions from the students if they're seeing something that wants to get better. I'm not one of these guys like, I made it, this is how it is, and that's whatever. I'm always like, listen. Mm-hmm. I'm just like you guys. I may have just spearheaded it, but if you see something that you feel like it could be better, like let us know. We want to always make it better, because I want it to be where it's like the number one site for people that want to learn how to learn specifically online.
That's cool. And they can access that through your website.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's great. I love it. Yeah. I love that idea. I may jump on with y'all.
We'd love to have you on.
I'm telling you, I've really... I've learned so much, and I really appreciate it. It's really been great. I can't let you go without talking about some gear.
Okay, great.
Okay. So, you still got that black Strat with the humbucker and the bridge?
Yeah.
That one speaks to me. That, I mean, just looking at it, it speaks to me.
So it's from LSL. It's a custom Satakoi. And the reason why I was really excited about working with LSL is I wanted to, you know, partner with the brand that I felt like could really find my voice.
Uh-huh.
And so when we went to go build this guitar, I told Lance, I was like, listen, I wanted to look like this guitar fell off a pickup truck, but I wanted to still be new. and I wanted to be able to sing, you know, so whenever I dig in, it would definitely give it. So, like, I went to the factory, walked around, we picked the woods, we picked the paint, we picked the pickups, and I really felt like it was my personal guitar,
yeah.
You know, like, because a lot of times you get a guitar built, it doesn't necessarily feel like it's you.
Yeah.
It's like you help design it, but it doesn't feel like it's you. And so LSL, like, they made me feel like, I didn't like physically do it, but they made me feel like I physically did it.
Right.
And that was the great, that was the joy of it. So yeah, I love it.
That's great. And that that white DGT that you got, that PRS.
I just picked it up from the shop.
Wow.
Yeah. That this guitar is a definite monster. And what was crazy is like, this is when I was on with PRS and I went, so Wynn was the artist relation rep that I met in LA. And I told Wynn, I'm doing this show. I said, but I need to have something so when the cameras are on, it definitely sticks out on stage. He's like, man, we have this white PR DGT, like, you'll love it. And I was like, at first I was like, no, I really haven't played white guitars. Like, I don't want it to get dirty. He's like, no, I'm telling you. Every time when people use a white guitar for PRS, all the cameras, like, stick on it. So I said, okay, I tried it. And sure enough, I watched the footage back. The camera guys are following me everywhere. So I was like, I said, he knows what he's talking about.
But
yeah, I'm really falling in love with that guitar. So yeah.
That's great. That's like a cop with a red car.
Yeah, that's
yeah, man, absolutely. I see that guitar and I go, boy, that almost makes me want to go get a tuxedo. And, you know, play that with a tuxedo on. Good God. It is a classy instrument. It really is. Yeah. You know, Over the last, it's almost 2 years I've been playing PR. I'm a huge Fender guy. I love Fender.
Okay. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I've been playing PRS now along with my Fenders for about 2 years. And it took me this long to find a PRS that I liked. And because they just weren't, I don't know. Every time I'd grab one, I'd be like, you know. And now I finally found two that I really love, and you're going to have to pry them out of my cold, dead hands.
Once you find the right one, it's just like you find.
Yeah.
Like you said, it does take you a while because they do have so many models. And sometimes, like for me, I remember I bought a custom 24, and I liked the color. But it just did not, I could not get it to sound the way I wanted. So I had to eventually wind up selling it. So I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Just because they're beautiful instruments, but they just don't necessarily always agree with what you're doing or the tone that you want. But when you find that right one,
right,
you can never,
absolutely,
like I said, you can't part with it. So.
Absolutely. What's your go-to amp?
So for me, I love playing a Bad Cat Lynx. That's my first go-to. Like that's the Bad Cat for me makes amazing stuff. But then after that, then it's a Massive Boogie Long Star.
Great amp.
So. Yeah, so now I just recently picked up the Kemper, and all of these profiles, I'm literally like a kid in a candy store.
I heard that.
Every day, I'm just like, oh my God, they got all this kind of stuff. I'm literally in there for hours just going through like each amp,
yeah.
And just like, what
but
is
didn't
this?
You just...
I have like I've got a running list of stuff. Like, I literally I've got 3 sheets of paper on my wall, and I've drawn a line. All my clean sounds, all my dirty, a little bit of dirt. Like I'm just turning out what I want. So I know specifically which ones I like. So yeah.
Yeah, you just posted a video yesterday of this really washy ambient reverb thing.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's what and what was crazy, the engineer. So I was at the session, I was talking about like all the other musicians flowing down. And so the engineer was like, yo, just try it. Like, because he knows I like reverb. He's like, yo, so we're doing like a worship song. Can you find like, he's like, one of these Hillsong kind of like ambient things. I'm like, I don't know what to look for because I'm still trying to figure it out. He's like, I'll show you. He picked out a little profile. I just started playing. I was just like, oh my God. And so that's one of the reasons why I was just like, I had to get the Kemper because it's got so many different things in it. So yeah, it's an awesome piece of equipment. And it's probably as authentic of a profiler that I've worked with in a long time.
Yeah, I'm pretty surprised. I really am. Being a bit of a tube snob, I'm pretty surprised.
Oh yeah, that's what I said. I fought the Kemper for years.
Yeah.
I fought it for years. I was like, I'm never going to do it. And I happened to do a session, and the artist and the engineer were like, yo, just show up. You don't need anything. So I was like, don't show up. Like, I don't need anything. I just show up. So I got in there. They had the Kemper, and I was like, oh, hell no, man. I don't want the Kemper. And he was like, no, just try it. And so that experience was so good. I went out and bought one like a week later.
That's great. That's great. Well, Kerry, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out to talk to me.
I'm truly humbled, man. Thanks for having me. Seriously, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. And I wish you all the best. Folks, please, let me get this right. I want to get it right. Please go to Kerry2Smooth. That's the number two. Kerry2Smooth.com. Check out Kerry's camp. Check out what he's doing. When you go to Apple Music, you can't necessarily find the full album of No Ordinary Conversation, but if you go to iTunes, it is there, and I highly recommend this record, folks. You really want to hear the lush, and that's the word I'd use, the lush tones of Kerry2Smooth Marshall. It's really good. Man, thank you so much. I appreciate you very, very much. All right. Hold on one second, but we're going to sign off right here.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Check out Guitar Radio Show on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, guitarradioshow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Find Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you like the artists you hear on Guitar Radio Show, don't just stream their music, buy it.